It was a flaking three-story house in the ancient part of the city, a century old if it was a day, but like all houses, it had been given a thin fireproof plastic sheath many years ago, and this preservative shell seemed to be the only thing holding it in the sky. "Here we are!" The engine slammed to a stop. Beatty, Stoneman, and Black ran up the sidewalk, suddenly odious and fat in their plump fireproof slickers. Montag followed. They crashed the front door and grabbed at a woman. Though she was not running, she was not trying to escape. She was only standing, weaving from side to side, her eyes fixed upon a nothingness in the wall, as if they had struck her a terrible blow upon the head. Her tongue was moving in her mouth, and her eyes seemed to be trying to remember something, and then they remembered, and her tongue moved again. "Play the man, Master Ridley. We shall this day light such a candle by God's grace in England, as I trust shall never be put out."
"Enough of that," said Beatty. "Where are they?"
He slapped her face with amazing objectivity and repeated the question. The old woman's eyes came to a focus upon Beatty. "You know where they are, or you wouldn't be here," she said. Stoneman held out the telephone alarm card with the complaint signed in telephone duplicate on the back.
"Have reason to suspect attic, 11 North Elm City, EB.
"That would be Mrs. Blake, my neighbor," said the woman, reading the initials.
"All right, man, let's get 'em."
Next thing, they were up in musty blackness, swinging silver hatchets at doors that were, after all, unlocked, tumbling through like boys all rollick and shout.
"Hey!"
A fountain of books sprang down upon Montag as he climbed, shuddering up the sheer stairwell. How inconvenient. Always before, it had been like snuffing a candle. The police went first, and adhesive taped the victim's mouth, and bandaged him off into their glittering beetle cars, so when you arrived, you found an empty house. You weren't hurting anyone. You were hurting only things. And since things really couldn't be hurt, since things felt nothing, and things don't scream or whimper, as this woman might begin to scream and cry out, there was nothing to tease your conscience later. You were simply cleaning up, janitorial work, essentially. Everything to its proper place, quick with the kerosene, who's got a match? But now, tonight, someone had slipped. This woman was spoiling the ritual. The men were making too much noise, laughing, joking, to cover her terrible accusing silence below. She made the empty rooms roar with accusation and shake down a fine dust of guilt that was sucked in their nostrils as they plunged about. It was neither cricket nor correct. Montag felt an immense irritation. She shouldn't be here, on top of everything. Books bombarded his shoulders, his arms, his upturned face. A book lit, almost obediently, like a white pigeon in his hands, wings fluttering. In the dim, wavering light, a page hung open and was like a snowy feather, the words delicately painted thereon. In all the rush and fervor, Montag had only an instant to read a line, but it blazed in his mind for the next minute, as if stamped there with fiery steel. "Time has fallen asleep in the afternoon sunshine." He dropped the book. Immediately, another fell into his arms.
"Montag, up here!"
Montag's hand closed like a mouth, crushed the book with wild devotion, with an insanity of mindlessness to his chest. The men above were hurling shovelfuls of magazines into the dusty air. They fell like slaughtered birds, and the woman stood below, like a small girl, among the bodies. Montag had done nothing. His hand had done it all. His hand, with a brain of its own, with a conscience and a curiosity in each trembling finger, had turned thief. Now it plunged the book back under his arm, pressed it tight to sweating armpit, rushed out empty with a magician's flourish. "Look here, innocent, look!" He gazed, shaken, at that white hand. He held it way out, as if he were farsighted. He held it close, as if he were blind.
"Montag!"
He jerked about.
"Don't stand there, idiot!"
The books lay like great mounds of fishes left to dry. The men danced and slipped and fell over them. Titles glittered their golden eyes, falling, gone.
"Kerosene!"
They pumped the cold fluid from the numeraled 451 tanks strapped to their shoulders. They coated each book. They pumped rooms full of it. They hurried downstairs, Montag staggering after them in the kerosene fumes.
"Come on, woman!"
The woman knelt among the books, touching the drenched leather and cardboard, reading the gilt titles with her fingers while her eyes accused Montag.
"You can't ever have my books," she said.
"You know the law," said Beatty. "Where's your common sense? None of those books agree with each other. You've been locked up here for years with a regular damned Tower of Babel. Snap out of it. People in those books never lived. Come on now.
She shook her head.
The whole house is going up, said Beatty.
The men walked clumsily to the door. They glanced back at Montag, who stood near the woman.
You're not leaving her here, he protested.
She won't come.
Well, force her then.
Beatty raised his hand in which was concealed the igniter.
We're due back in the house. Besides, these fanatics always try suicide. The pattern's familiar.
Montag placed his hand on the woman's elbow. You can come with me.
No, she said. Thank you, anyway.
I'm counting to 10, said Beatty. 1, 2.
Please, said Montag. Go on, said the woman.
3, 4.
Here, Montag pulled at the woman. The woman replied quietly, I want to stay here.
5, 6.
You can stop counting, she said.
She opened the fingers of one hand slightly, and in the palm of the hand was a single, slender object, an ordinary kitchen match.